So we're holding on Kuf Chof Aleph, Omer Aleph, the second line. We're going through the list of things in the Mishnah that the Mishnah had said. The Mishnah had said that these are things that combine together with flesh, as far with meat, as far as Tumas Uchlin, but not Tumas Nevelis. Meaning, we said, in other words, when it comes to food, when it comes to Tumah of food, and you have Machlokas Rishonim, how much food do you need to become Tameh, where Tosfos holds you need a Kebetza to even become Tameh in the first place. Rashi and the Rambam hold that any amount can become Tameh, but as far as transmitting Tumah to something else, to other food, definitely everybody agrees you need a Kebetza. So then we were saying in the Mishnah that if you have part of the Kebetza is made up of meat, and part of it is made up of one of these things listed in the Mishnah, then it'll still count together, but not for Tumas Nevelis, in the sense that if you have with a Nevela, you need a Kazan for to be metame, a person who touches or carries it, there the whole kazayas has to be made out of the actual body of the animal and not these various things that we listed in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah said v'ha'olol. So one of the things that was on the list in the Mishnah is the olol. So my olol. So what does olol mean? Where we're saying again that it's not something that it itself is food, but it's something that can count as something that can count as like an adjunct to food, such that it can be counted together with the such that it can be counted together to make up the kebetza. So Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mautika. Rabbi Yochanan says that it means Rabbi Yochanan defines it as Mautika, which Rashi explains means the gid of the spine and the neck. So as we learned before, gid has a variety of different meanings in halacha. It means nerves, it means tendons, it means different kinds of things. But this is some kind of tendon. Rashi describes it's very wide and hard. It's very wide and white and very hard. It's wide and white and very hard, Rashi says. So Rashi gives a French translation of it, ibul. What would that translate to in English? So Oitzolazi Rashi describes it as literally the word means the knee, but over here it means the neck tendon. So in other words, basically I guess Rashi is taking the word for a joint, as in a knee, and using it for this tendon of that joint. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying, therefore, so it's not really edible by itself, but nevertheless, it still can go together with the food as far as Tumas Eichlin. Tosfos brings a different explanation from Rabbeinu Hanano that it means dead flesh. So in other words, sometimes you have a living creature that has some dead necrotic flesh on it, and Tosfos says that would be the meaning of Mautika over here in the Gemara. So now the Mishnah had also mentioned Gidin. Tosfos mentions in the Mishnah that the difference would be if we say, as Rashi says, that Mautika over here means the gid of the neck, then the point is it's hard, nevertheless it's still Matama Tumas Earthlin, and nevertheless though we shouldn't think that maybe other Gidin don't have Tumas Nevelis, and the point would be only and the point was, so it would be mentioning this, would be singling this one out because it has a special characteristic, because it's much harder and tougher than the other ones. If you had only said Gidin and not this one, you would have said maybe it doesn't even combine together. And if it mentioned only the Olo, then you would think maybe other Gidim do combine for Tumas Nevelis. So therefore, it lists them separately to make it clear the rules for both of them. Okay, so that's one opinion. Resh Lakish Amar Basar Sheplotatu Sakin. Resh Lakish has a different definition of it. He says that Olo is meat that was left over by the knife. Namely, when you're skinning an animal, so you take a knife and you're using the knife to separate between the skin and the flesh. Sometimes the knife slips a little bit and you end up cutting away a piece of the flesh and leaving it attached to the skin. So Rosh Lakish would say that's the definition of olol in our Mishnah. Okay. The Gemara says Mesvi, though. I have a contradiction on Rosh Lakish's definition of leftover meat. You find a pasuk in Eov, so throughout Sefer Eov, his friends he and his friends are debating back and forth, why is all this happening to him, etc. And at one point he says to them, after they've gone through quite a few arguments, and they haven't been able to convince, they're trying to convince him that there has to be a reason for why this is happening to you, and you must have done something wrong, and you need to figure out what it is and do tshuva. And he's telling them, I haven't done anything wrong, and they're going back and forth about that and various other things like that. So now, at one point he tells them, Ulam, he says, however, atem toifle shoker, you guys are just adding to, are just adding falsehood. Like you're, toifle literally means like you're plastering. So it's just like you're plastering your words, like you say something, which doesn't mean much, and then you're plastering and putting on top of it a layer of another falsehood. And he continues, Roife Elil Kulchem, all of you are doctors of Elil. Elil, the Gemara's understanding, has the same meaning as Olol of our Mishnah. Usually the word Elil means like Getchkes, like we have Kikolalake or Amim Elilim. It's the same basic idea. In other words, something useless and worthless or whatever. So we're understanding that he's telling them that you are like doctors of Elil, of Olol. So b'shleimelam under amam martika. So in other words, Eev is telling them as much good as it would do to try to fix up the olol. That's how much good you guys are doing. Well, b'shleimelam under amam martika. Well, if we say then that the definition of olol in our Mishnah is martika, ha'inu delav barafuhu, then we understand that's not capable of being healed. Whether you understand like Rashi that it means a strong tendon of the neck. If that gets cut or damaged, there's really no way of curing it. Well, according to Rabbeinu Chananel and Tosfos, that it means dead flesh. Then, yeah, there's no way of bringing that back to life. So then we understand Eev's figure of speech. But if you're talking about meat that the knife slipped and ended up and it stayed attached to the skin, why? Barufuahu, such a thing is healable. Sometimes you can have, conceivably, a person, you have mice in Beholyim, you know, a person gets a piece of a finger, let's say sliced off, it is possible to put it back in place, and eventually it heals and reattaches. So then, why would Eev be using such a figure of expression? Such a figure of speech then? Fine. The Gemara says, fine, because the machlokas is not about the word olol in the pasuk. Fine, there you could say that definitely means the neck tendon, like Rabbi Yochanan is saying. Kipligi, but olol the masnissin. The machlokas is in the Mishnah. Does the word olol have the same meaning as Eev's elil, or maybe not? As the Gemara is going to tell us later in the Masechta, sometimes you have a concept called Loshen Torah Lefud, the Loshen Chachamim Lefud. Sometimes the wording, the vocabulary, or the syntax, or whatever, that the Torah uses is different than the way the Chachamim do. And it's partial, you know, languages develop and change over time. The register of Hebrew that the Chachamim use is not necessarily the same as what's used in Tanakh. So therefore, the meaning of Olol may have changed between the times of Eov and the time when the Mishnah was composed. Okay, so the Gemara says, fine, Toshma, let's bring another proof. The Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yehuda Omer HaOlol HaMachonas, Rabbi Yehuda says, if you gather together Olol, Im Yesh Kezayis Makom Echad, if there's a Kezayis in one place together, and it's connected together very well, and it's gathered together very well, Chayav and Olav, then a person is Chayav for it. Now, Chayav for what? Rashi says, if he eats it, he's Chayav for eating the Kezayis of Nevela. And if he touches it, then he would be Chayav for going into the Beis Mikdash. Now, our Mishnah had said that there's no Tumas Nevelos in it. So evidently, Rashi says, this Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda, in that detail, is arguing with the Mishnah. Our Mishnah had just said, Rabbi Yehuda had said, Chayav Olav, and he hadn't specified what he's Chayav for. So now we're saying he's arguing with the Tanakhama as far as both possibilities, both as far as eating it and being Chayav Malkus for it, and for touching it and then going into the Beis Mikdash or eating Kodshim, then he's going to be Chayav like it would for any other kind of tumah. Tosfos actually discusses that and says that not necessarily. We're not necessarily talking about eating. Eating maybe, first of all, Tosfos says that he doesn't say explicitly matamet tumas nevelos, because then you would think maybe it's only derabanan. Chayav and Olav makes it clear that it's actually also daraisa. On the other hand, Tosfos says, when it comes to, well, why would he say there's a difference whether he considered it choshuv and gathered it together or not? Either way, eating is eating. So Tosfos says, no, either way, if he eats it, he's going to be chayev. You don't need to gather it together for a person to be chayev. We're talking about if he gathered it together and then entered the Beis Mikdash. And again, you don't want to say tomei, because you would think that means derabanan. So saying chayev olav makes it clear that we're talking about a tumah d'oraisa. So Rabbi Yehuda says that if you gather it together, then chayav and olav. Amar Rav Huna voshakonsei. And Rav Huna clarifies that what Rav Yehuda means is when we said hamachunas, that it was gathered, don't just think it means it was gathered together by itself. It means that actually voshakonsei, that means only if he himself deliberately gathered it and therefore showed with that, as we learned before, achshavei, that he considers it important, he considers it something significant, showing that he wasn't mevatalist. But in other words, Rashi says, if it had been just gathered by itself, or just for example, accidentally fell into a heap, or if kids, let's say, gathered it where they're not considered to have a machshava, then Rabbi Yehuda would agree that that a person is not chayav for it. Now, let's see. Bishlem lamanda ala basa shaplatatu sakin. Well, then according to Rish Lakish, who says that olol means meat of the animal that accidentally the knife cut it away with the skin, hainu dechi kazayis mechayev. Well, that explains why if you have a kazayis together, you should be chayev, because then it shows that he considered it something important. In other words, after all, I mean, it started out, it's flesh like any other flesh. It just so happens that either the knife slipped and now it's with the flesh, and now it's with the skin. So now you could say if he gathers it together off the skin, then you could argue that he's shown by that he considers it important, and therefore if he gathers it together, then it has a different din. But if you're going to say like Rabbi Yochanan that it means mautika, whether you learn like Rashi that it means the tendon of the neck, or whether you learn like Tosfos that it means dead flesh, so what if there's a kazayis of it together? Eitz ba'almahu, shouldn't it just be considered like wood? It's still not something edible. So what's the difference whether there's a kazayis together or not? So the Gemara says, fine. Rabbi Yehuda's definition of olol, they have to be agreeing that it means basa shaplatatu sakin. Even Rabbi Yochanan is going to agree. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan is going to say the word olol has two meanings. He's going to say the word olol can mean this basa shaplatatu sakin. It means meat that was accidentally cut away by the knife. But he's going to say another meaning of olol is also the neck tendon. So when it comes to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, there's no question. It has to mean basa shaplatatu sakin. Ki pligi aliba de rabbanan. The machlokas would be according to the rabbanan, according to the Tanakhama, So now Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Rabbi Yochanan will say, given that the word olol according to him has two meanings, mautika nami mitzanis, then he's going to say two things. The Tanakhama actually means two things that can combine together. Number one, this basa shaplatatu sakin. Number one, meat that was accidentally cut away by the knife and left with the skin. And number two, mautika, however we define mautika according to Rashi and Tosfos respectively. So Rabbi Yochanan is going to say, according to the Tanakhama, both of them can be mitzanis. Both of them neither of them is going to be significant if you have a kazayis by itself, but to combine, or kabetza by itself, but to combine together with, other food to make up the rest of the kabetza, that Rabbi Yochanan says you can do. The Rish Lakish Rama, Davka Basa Shaplatatu Sakin, whereas Rish Lakish is going to say, the meat that was cut away by the knife, that's considered significant enough that it can combine together and help make up the kabetza. Ava Mautika, like Mitzanef, but Rish Lakish is going to say, the Mautika, the neck tendon, or dead flesh, as the case may be, is not going to combine together because that's just considered wood. Tosfos explains that we're not talking about over here where it's a shomer we already learned before is going to combine together. So we're saying though that let's say you have a kazayis of actual flesh on the end of it. So Rabbi Yochanan is going to say, fine, you can't eat it by itself, but when you're eating the meat, you can eat that as well. Whereas Rabbi Yishlokish is going to say, look, you can't eat it, you can't even eat it at all, even in combination with the flesh, and therefore it should just be considered wood. Okay. Well, the Gemara says, "Hi, basa shaplatatu sakin hechidami." Okay, now if we're talking about this basa shaplatatu sakin, we're talking about that the knife accidentally cut away some of the flesh, some of the muscles, and left them stuck to the skin. Well, hechidami. But what's exactly the scenario? If you're talking about that he thought, he decided afterwards, you know what, this is good meat, why am I letting it go to waste? I'm thinking I'm going to eat it anyway. I'll take it off the skin and I'll eat it. Then why should we say that? It only combines together. after the ban pein nafshi metame, then it should be metame even all by itself. As long as, you know, again, if you're going to say that food can become tame in any amount, then any shred of this should be able to become tame. If you're going to say like Tosfos that you need a kabetza, fine, but the whole kabetza could be made up of this stuff. Even if it's not something that's normally eaten, but nevertheless, so fine, it won't become, Rashi explains, it won't become flesh as far as Tumas Nevelis, because it was already bottled to the skin, but as far as eating, at least it should have Tumas Oichlin. If it touched the Sheretz, why would it be any different? Rashi says, for example, we learned earlier in the Masechta, let's say you have the actual skin of an animal. Now, normally that's not edible, with certain exceptions that we'll learn about tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. But let's say, for example, you have a skin that you boiled, and therefore you made it soft enough that in a pinch you could eat it. So then it actually has Tumas Oichlin. So then very well over here, why wouldn't this flesh? Fine, normally you wouldn't eat it, because normally just it's shreds that are stuck to the skin of the animal, to the hide of the animal, and when you go and whatever you're going to do with the hide, you're going to tan it or whatever, those are just going to go to waste. But if, in fact, you do have in mind that you're going to eat them, then why should they only be mitzaref? Why shouldn't they become tame all by themselves? And the idle chashiv alei, and if he didn't think about that, if he didn't decide that he's going to do that, but tuli batli, well, then he seems to have been mevatalit. And if he's mevatalit, then why does it have Tumas Oichlin? So the answer is Rab Ovin v'Rab Miyasha. So Rab Ovin and Rab Miyasha argue what the answer is. Chad Omer, one of them says that the case is mikatzase chishiv olav, that we're talking about where he thought about some of it that he plans to eat it. Now, he didn't specify what. So you have a bunch of this basur shplatatu sakin here and there. You have shreds of it clinging to the skin of the animal after the animal's been skinned. So now he decided, you know what? I don't want all of that to go to waste. I'm going to eat some of it. But he didn't specify precisely what he plans what he plans to eat or not. So you can't say a whole kabetza that should be makabel tumah because he didn't have a thought about all of it. But if it's combining together with other food, then that little bit can help make up the shiur. The Maharshal brings a girsa from a manuscript of Rashi that says basically that the part that he didn't have in mind is going to combine together with the part that he did have in mind. Once he shows that he wasn't mevatel some of it, then the other part will go together with it as well. So in other words, the point is, fine, he had in mind some of it, and therefore that some of it will be significant. So that's one answer. V'chad Omer, the other one between Rav Ovin and Rav Miyasha, answers, miktsose platatu chayim, miktsose platatu sakim. The answer is that part of it was cut away by an animal. So Rashi gives an example. Let's say a dog bit the animal, bit the kosher animal. So now the dog with its teeth broke away some flesh from the animal, and now you have a piece of skin hanging off with some flesh attached to it. Now that wasn't enough to make the animal treifa. In particular, we learned earlier in the Masechta when we talked about all about the dinim of drusa, we said a dog is not able to do drusa. A dog's attack is not considered something that's going to inject that type of venom that we talked about over there into the animal and make it tame and make it treifa. And in any case, we also said when an animal bites any animal, even the predators that we listed over there, when it bites, it also doesn't do that, only with its claws. So therefore, very well, a dog bit it. Now you have some flesh has been mostly torn away from the animal and is clinging to the skin. Afterwards, you shechted the animal. And now, in addition, as you're skinning the animal, then you cut away more shreds of flesh that remain stuck to the skin. And now you can't easily tell which one was platatu chaya and which one was platatu sakin. Now, the idea would be, in other words, that we're going to say what was bit away by the dog, you're not necessarily mevatel. We assume you would want that part as well. The part with the knife, because after all, you didn't do anything to make that happen. It was a dog's attack. It was a dog's attack. As opposed to the part that you cut away with the knife, that we can assume, the fact is, you cut with the knife in a certain way, and therefore it means you were mevatel it unless you otherwise specify. So that would explain according to that opinion. So now, when it comes to Tumas Oichlin, then again, it'll make a difference what you were mevatel or not. As opposed to when it comes to Tumas Nevelas, that not, because Rashi explains, because our Mishnah would follow the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, which we're going to learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, who says that because the meat is attached to the skin, therefore it is in fact bottle. Unlike we're saying over here that there might be that there might be shreds of it, which you're not mavatel. Rabbi Akiva holds that by default they're bottle to the skin, which is going to be relevant later on in the Perek. So therefore, as far as Tumas Nevelas, these shreds of skin that Platatu Chaya are not going to have Tumas Nevelas, even if there's a full Kazayas over there. But when it comes to Tumas Oichlin, we can say because he does have in mind to eat that part that the dog bit away, then even though along with it there are other parts which were not bit away by a dog, but rather where he cut with the knife and left them attached to the skin, nevertheless we're still going to say that all of it can combine together, because some of it, again, the idea is some of it he has in mind, because it was only from a dog, and some of it he intended to be mevatel because that's how he cut it with the knife. Okay, so the two answers are fairly similar as far as the idea, in other words, that we're talking about the part of this olo, he had a kavana on and part not, and that explains why our Mishnah is saying that it's only mitzvah that it only combines together, but not that all by itself it can make up the kibetza of food. So in other words, in both cases, the idea is that you don't really know which is which. You don't know which part he had in mind. You don't know which part was done by the dog and which part was done by the cutting, and therefore it can be mitzvah. Okay. Now the Gemara says Tanan Hossam. We learn in a Mishnah in Masechet Taharos on the subject or related to the subject. Here's another point about parts of an animal. Or in that Mishnah actually is talking about bird parts that are relevant as far as tumah or not. Now we've learned a bunch of times about the din that if a person swallows a kezias of nivlas oif tahar of a dead kosher bird, then it makes him tumah as he swallows it. So now we have to figure out, the Mishnah describes what parts of the bird count towards that kezias. So the Mishnah says a chartum, the beak of the bird, vatsiponayim, or the claws, the talons, mitamin, they're able to become tomei, umitamin, and they're able to transmit tuma, meaning they're considered, like we learned before, they're considered a yad, they're a handle for the tumma. So therefore, in other words, if the source of tumma touches them, then the bird becomes, then the bird's flesh becomes tumma, and vice versa. If the bird is tumma, then the beak or whatever also count towards that. They're also a yad. And with starfin, and they even combine together for the kabeza. Meaning not like a yad, like we learned before, but more like a shomer. So the question is chautum eitz ba'almahu. The question is though, why would the beak be included in that? The beak is basically considered like wood. You can't eat the beak of a bird. So in other words, that Mishnah seems to be implying they're considered part of the food, part of the edible part of the bird as well. But the beak is not in fact edible. So fine, mitamin would be a yad. And a yad, we don't care whether it's edible or not, like we learned a few in the last few blocks. For example, a bone can be considered a yad, even though it's not edible. But when it comes to, the beak is not a shomer, it's not protecting anything underneath it in any way on the face of it. So it's not really that. It would have to be that it's for the reasons like the other things mentioned in our Mishnah, namely that it itself is not food by itself, but you can eat it in combination with something else. But you can't. You can't eat the beak even in combination with something else. So the answer is Amar Rabbi Elazar b'chartum or tachtin. Fine, we're talking about the lower beak. So the Gemara asks tachtin nami eitz ba'almahu. What's the difference? The upper beak or the lower beak? Both of them are hard, and neither of one of them is edible. And the answer is Amar Papa tachtin shel elyon. What Rabbi Elazar meant is not the lower beak, but he means the lower part of the upper beak. Meaning there's the beak, which is hard and not edible, but inside the mouth of the bird, you have there's a strip of flesh over there along the length of the beak. So it's not edible all by itself, but if you're eating the meat, then you could conceivably eat it together with it, because it's not quite as hard as the beak itself. So therefore, so that's what it'll mean that it'll count. Okay, what about siponayim? We said, what about the nails or the talons of the bird? Well, also, aren't they also etzba alma? Aren't they also just wood? Why would they combine? Because what the Mishnah means is the parts of them that are embedded into the flesh. So in other words, like the roots, the same way as a person, you have the fingernails themselves are hardened keratin and they're not edible. But you go further down, you go to where they grow out of the finger, out of the fingertips and out of the toe tips. Then you have a part further down which is softer, where it hasn't gotten keratinized yet and it's still edible. So that's what we mean then. Your papa says that's what Rabbi Elazar says. That's the part of the claws of the bird that if a person that those would combine together to make up the kazayis. Okay. Now, the next piece over here, the next line of the Gemara does not have two dots before it, and it makes it sound as though we're going to explain something else from that Mishnah in Taurus. However, Tosfos points out that Mishnah only mentioned as far as the beak and the claws of a bird, and now we're going to talk about horns. Birds don't have horns. So actually, there's supposed to be two dots before this word karnayim, and that's now going back to our Mishnah on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis at the beginning of the Perek and explaining, what do we mean that the horns would combine together? Wouldn't you have the same problem that the horns are also not something that's edible? So karnayim, avar apop of makom shachoyskin v'yoytz mehem dam. It means the part of the horn which is right at the base of the horn where it starts growing out of the skull. The part where if you cut it, then blood would come out. So at that point, in other words, that there, the horns are soft, and therefore, again, you wouldn't eat them by themselves, but you could eat them in combination together with the, flesh, and therefore it would be mitzaris. With that said, there are mephoshim who learn that actually it would be because it could be considered a shomer, because again, it's something that protects the flesh underneath. Okay. So that covers the list of things in the Mishnah. That covers most of the things in the list of the Mishnah that said mitzarfin, that they do combine together for tumas ochlin and not tumas nevelis. Now, the Mishnah had gone on to say, in a similar vein, if somebody shechts a non-kosher animal for a goy, and it's still moving around convulsively, then we said it had tumas ochlin but not tumas nevelis. Meaning, as we learned in the Mishnah a few days ago, Rashi explained, it has to be davka shechting it, davka behemet meah, and davka for a goy. So namely, in other words, because a yid shechted it, we do consider that the shechita has a certain validity to it. Now, had it been a kosher animal, it would be perfectly kosher for the Jew to eat. Because it's a non-kosher animal, then he can't. Because his shechita has validity, even though this is a non-kosher animal, and in practice he can't eat it, therefore it's able to have tumas ochlin. His shechita is enough to make it that now at least it makes it considered food. However, if a goy were to shecht it, then no, there's no such thing as a goy shechting. There's no concept of a goy shechting that it makes any difference whether he shechts or kills any other way. And the same thing if a yid killed it in some other way, then you wouldn't have. So it has to be, therefore, as we're going to learn in the Gemara now, that all those four details are significant. In order for it to have Tumas Ochlin, it has to be it was a Jew, it has to be it was Shechita, it had to be a Behemet Tmeya, and it had to be Mefau Keses, that it's still moving around, where therefore the goy can't eat from it yet. So that's what the Mishnah had said. In that case, still the meat of it is considered food to the extent where it will have tumas ochlin, where it will be able to become tame as food, but not as tumas nevelis. It won't be considered tumas nevelis yet. It won't be considered tumas nevelis because the fact is that it did undergo a proper shechita. So now the Gemara says, Amar Abasi. So Abasi says, Shoinin, there are some Tanoim who have a slightly different version of our Gemara, of our Mishnah. And they learn, Yisrael b'tmeya, v'ovid k'chavim b'tahora. So they learn, not really a different version of our Mishnah, but a different version of the underlying principles of our Mishnah. There are some Tanoim who learn that it means whether Yid shechts a behemoth tmeya or whether a Goy shechts a behemoth tahora. Either way, he holds tzrichin machshava. It would require machshava. They would actually have to have a machshava, and machshava might mean a thought. It might mean speaking. That they actually make it clear that they plan to eat it. If not, then it wouldn't be considered food until the animal actually dies. When it's a Yid shechting a behemoth tmeya, he can't eat it. And when it comes to a Goy shechting a behemoth tahora, a Yid, again, can't eat from it. And a Goy, either way, can't eat from it until it stops moving. So therefore, Rav Asi says that there are some Tanoim who hold that it would require machshava, the hechsher mayim mimokam acher. Furthermore, it would also require hechsher. It would require to be made susceptible to tumah by becoming wet with one of the shiva mashkin. Because Rashi explains the fact that blood came out during the shchita is not going to be effective. We learned earlier in the Masechta that when you have a proper shchita, then we learned a hekesh that says that it's considered like water. But other than that, if it's not a proper shchita, and here it's not a proper shchita for either of two reasons, either because it's a non-kosher animal, even though it was shechted by a yid, or because it was a goy shechting, even though it was an otherwise kosher animal, then neither of those is considered a proper shchita, and the only kind of blood from them that would be machshir would be what the Gemara called dam chalolim. Which would be only if you cut through the neck. So not a shchita where you don't cut through the entire neck, you only cut through the pipes in it. So in other words, these Tanoim are pointing out two things. First of all, that our Mishnah had talked about a Yid shechting a behemoth tmeya for a goy, and now Rav Asi is saying you should know that these Tanoim also hold the same rule would also apply as far as a goy shechting a behemoth tahora. The point is different than our Mishnah. Our Mishnah had said that it automatically has Tumas Eichlin. Now Rav Asi is saying that actually you would actually have to have Machshava. You would actually have to have a specific thought on the part of the one who did the shechita that he planned to eat this. And second of all, that even though behemoth tahora usually doesn't need machshava, but here where it was a goy shechting it, then in fact you do. At least as long as it's still moving around. And in addition, also that it needs hechsher mayim and mokamacha, that it also has to become wet with water or one of the shiva mashkim from someplace else. The blood that came out during the shchita is not going to be machshir the kabbal tumah. Well, the Gemara asks, hechsher lomali, why would it need hechsher? Why would it need to become susceptible to tumah? Soifa l'tame tumah chamura. After all, isn't it going to, in the end, it's going to have a strong tumah? Because either way, whether it was a yid and a non-kosher animal, or whether, in which case, really, by a non-kosher animal, shchita is meaningless. No matter how the animal was killed, it's still also for a yid to eat. And it still has the din of nevela. It still has the din of an animal that died without proper shchita, and therefore it's going to be in the tamei. And if it was a kosher animal but was shechted by a goy, same thing, because a goy's shchita is not valid, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. And therefore, either way, it's going to have tumah chamura. It's going to have the stronger tumah of tumas nevelas. Namely, that's going to be in the tamei, a person who touches or carries it. And b'chol shesofa l'tamei tumah chamura, and as a general rule, we know that something that's going to eventually have tumah chamura, loy boi hechsher, does not require hechsher, because anyway it's going to have tumah chamura. Because it's going to have the stronger tumah. And we know that, the Toni Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, because we learn in a braisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, the pasuk is v'chiyutan mayim al zera. The pasuk describes, when it talks about being machshir l'kabel tumah, it says if water, and it means not just water, it means the other six liquids as well, falls on a seed. Now, why did the pasuk mention specifically a seed? Mazroyim shein soy from the tamat tumah chamura. Because what do we see about seeds? Seeds are never going to have tumah chamura. If tumah chamura for this purpose means abha tumah, means something that's able to be metame a person or kevin. Now, Rashi explains that only things that the general rule is, Rashi mentions, even if food, suppose food touches an avia voisa tumah, something which is a mess is avia voisa tumah. It's a father of fathers of tumah. Meaning that, for example, a person touches a mess, or a person is in the same oihel as a mess, then he becomes an avatoma, and now he in turn can be metame another person or kalim or whatever. But if food touches a mess, the food never becomes an avatoma; it can only become a rishon latoma. The reason is, Rashi explains, basically, we learn from a pasuk that says, That the pasuk says that anything that the pasuk implies that only things that can be toveled in a mikra and become tahor afterwards, those are the things that can become tame with a mess. Well, food can never be toveled in a mikra. Klei cheres, udenware kalim, are in the same category as well. Dipping them in a mikra has no effect. Therefore, we learn from that they cannot become an avat tumah in the first place. They can only become a rishon l'tumah. So therefore, so seeds are never going to have tumah chamura. They're never going to have that strong kind of tumah that can be metame a person or kalim. And therefore, the pasuk is implying, the pasuk is saying, tzrich and hechsher, those are the things that require hechsher, those are the things that require to be wedded with one of the shiva mashkim in order to be able to become tumah in the future. So af kol shein sofer the tama tumah chamura. So we can learn from that anything which is never going to be able to contract tumah chamura, tzarech hechsher, requires hechsher, and if not then it's not able to be makabel tumah. And we see, as opposed to things that are going to have tumah chamura, they don't require hechsher. They're automatically susceptible to tumah already because eventually they're going to be metame at a later. They're going to be metame at a later stage anyway. Because for example, with this nevela, a person picks it up, a person touches it, or a person carries it, then he's going to become tumah. So there is discussion among Rishonim, actually. Does that mean that something that's going to have tumah chamura, for example, this nevela over here, before we talk about nivlas oif tahor, are we talking about that it doesn't need anything? It's automatically able to become tumah. It's automatically tumah by itself, even if it didn't touch a sheretz or anything else. On the other hand, so Rashi in Or Silvia mentions a couple of times that even the nivlas oif tahor needs, even though it itself intrinsically is metame when a person swallows it. Nevertheless, that's as far as the special tumah of nivlas oif tahor. But otherwise, to have tumas oiflin, it would still have had to touch a sheretz or some other source of tumah. So, in other words, he holds
something that needs a hechsher is able to give a tumah chamura or not.
No, so what we're saying is the other way around. If it is ever going to have tumah chamura, then it doesn't require hechsher. So, for example, a nevela, we're saying, does not need to be wedded with one of the shiva mashkim in order to be able to transmit tumah to something else.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
whereas
food does, right. Now, the question is, when it comes to this nevela or something else, does it require, though, in order, if you want it to have the tumah of food as well, and not just nevela, is it going to have to touch a source of tumah in order to do that or not? So Rashi, a couple of times in our sugya, says that yes, even let's say the nivlas oif tahor, the dead kosher bird, it doesn't need wedding to become susceptible to tumah, but nevertheless, it's still, if you want it to have tumas oiflin, it's still going to have touched a sheretz or some other source of tumah. So as opposed to many other Rishonim learn that no, it means that it'll automatically have both tumas oiflin and tumas nevelis right away. Okay, in any case, the point is that we see from Rabbi Shmuel's, from Dvei Rabbi Shmuel's Drasha, that food requires hechsher, but because it's not going to have tumah chamura, as opposed to a nevela is going to have tumah chamura. So then what are you telling me? What is Rav Asi telling us, that if a yid shechted a behemoth tmeir or a goy shechted a behemoth tahora, you're going to require hechsher. Why? It's a nevela, it's going to have tumah chamura. And the answer, Vitania, and to sharpen the question, we learn in a braisa, Amr Rabbi Yosi, Mifnei Ma Omrim Nivlas Oif Tor, Tzurcha Machshova, and Tzurcha Hechsher. Why did the Chachamim say, you have a Mishnah at the beginning of Masechta Taharos that says there are 13 dinim that apply to the nevela of a kosher bird, one of them being this din, about that if a person swallows it, it becomes Tameh, and then it goes on to mention a number of other dinim, and one of them is Tzurcha Machshova. It requires Machshova. You do have to think of it as food, otherwise it's not Makabel Tumah. Meaning, the point of it being Makabel Tumah or not, in other words, is again, when it comes to a Nivlas Oif Tahor, the only way that it transmits Tumah ordinarily is by a person swallowing it. So other than that, if this dead kosher bird touched other food, it wouldn't make it Tumah. So Rabbi Yossi is saying, what do we mean, Tzricha Machshava? Why did the Chachamim say that it requires Machshava, and that if the person planned to eat it, Only then, if it touches other food, is it going to be metame? Why is that? And then you have the question, then you have the machloikas on that, whether it itself has to have become tame from something else first. But in any case, why is that? The inet tzricha hechsher, but on the other hand, it doesn't require hechsher, as the Mishnah says there in Taharis. The reason is, because we just said, mefesh sorry for the tame, truma chamura, because eventually it's going to have truma chamura, because it's capable of making a person tame with truma chamura if he swallows it. So therefore, so it doesn't require hechsher, because again, we learn from this braisa about the seeds that it doesn't. Now, why is it in machshava? Rashi explains, because in villages, people don't usually eat birds. In villages, I guess, they have plenty of livestock available, so therefore people don't usually make much of a point of eating birds if they're going to eat meat, they're going to eat from actual animals. As opposed to, Rashi points out, the Mishnah tells us that in a different Mishnah, in Masechta Uktzin, tells us that actually in big cities it doesn't require machshava, because in big cities they don't have much of a supply of meat, and therefore whatever meat is available they're going to plan to eat. In this case, it's an avela. Jews are not going to plan to eat it. Goyim will. But the point is, in other words, that in a place like that where meat is in short supply, then they'll eat anything and they don't need machshava. In any case, so that explains why it needs machshava, because we're talking about in a place where they otherwise wouldn't bother eating it. But it doesn't need hechsher, he's saying, because it's capable of having truma chamura. So then, in that case, so what is Rav Asi telling us? That there are some tanoim who learn that, in fact, it does require that with the nevela of the animal that we were talking about before, it does require hechsher. Why? If it's going to have tumah chamura anyway, then based on everything we just said, it shouldn't require hechsher either. And the answer is omachiskiyah hoyov yochol legoira ol amida pachas mikzayis. So Rav Chizkiyah says the reason is because when we're talking about this animal that was shechted, and we're talking about it still moving around convulsively, it doesn't yet have tumah chamura. And it may never reach tumah chamura, it may never reach the stage of having the tumah of an avela, because conceivably you could cut it into tiny little pieces, less than a kazayas, and then it's not going to have tumah nevela, because nevela requires at least a kazayas. As opposed to the nivlas oiftar, is already dead, it's already ready, there's nothing else that needs to be done for it to have tumah chamura except to swallow it. But here you also need, this animal has just been shechted, whether again we're talking about a behemoth smeya shechted by a yid, or a behemoth tahora shechted by a goy, but it's still moving around, conceivably while it's moving around you can cut it into small pieces, and you could cut it into small pieces, each less than a kazayas, and therefore it's not necessarily going to ever reach the stage of tumah chamura. So that would be why it requires hechsher. Because the rule of not requiring hechsher is only when automatically nothing else is needed to do with it, except the one thing that's going to, where the tumah is going to be transmitted, which in the case of the bird would be swallowing it, and in the case of the nevela would be carrying or touching it. But in the case of the nevela, we're saying there's an additional stage, namely you could cut it into small pieces before that, and therefore it wouldn't. Tosfos actually says maybe it wouldn't even need to be pieces smaller than a kazayas. You could even say it could be big pieces as long as you don't have any individual aver, as long as you don't have any individual limb. The Gemara is going to go on to explain now that to a certain extent this animal is still considered alive, and flesh that comes off a living animal is not metame. So fine. In any case, so that means another. So in other words, either way, the point is the nevela is not necessarily going to have tumah chamura. Now, though, the Ramban asks an odd thing. I mean, the Ramban says, look, as a practical matter, while you're cutting up the animal into pieces smaller than a kazayas, it's still going to be mefarkeses. It's still going to be moving around. He calls it dvar pelahu. It's a wondrous thing. How would that be possible? So the Ramban quotes the Ravid, who says what it means is that while the behemoth is mefarkeses, while it's still moving around, not that you could cut up the whole thing, but at least you can cut off some pieces of it, each of which is less than a kazayas, and those pieces are never going to have tumas nevela because they were cut off while the animal is still considered alive. So in other words, any given part of the animal conceivably might still be on it while it's mefarkesis. And therefore, so you can't say on any given part of it that it's ever going to have tumah chamura. So that explains what Rav Asi is saying. These shoinin, these chachamim who learn that way. The Rambam actually paskins differently than that. He says that either way it is going to have tumah chamura, and therefore it doesn't require hechsher. So in other words, he understands that Rav Asi is saying shoinim. There are some tanoim who learn that way, but that doesn't mean that's not the last word on the subject. Fine. So we're saying that Chizkiyad said conceivably you could cut it into pieces small enough that it's not going to have too much nevelus. The question is, Amalei Reb Yirmiyah, the Reb Zeira, or Mi Omer Chizkiyah, Achi? Does Chizkiyah really say that? That when it comes to an animal that's moving around still convulsively after the shvita, that it doesn't yet have, that it doesn't yet have too much nevelus? But we said, it was said that there was a discussion about that very point. Shochat Roshnayim or Roshnayim, suppose that you shechted the two pipes in an animal, or Rav Shnayim, or most of the, or most of it, or most of the two pipes, which as we learned in the early, as we learned near the beginning of the Masechta, that's a valid shita by itself. And here we're talking about, Rashi says again, we're talking about a behemoth tmeya, a non-kosher animal, v'adayin hi mefakesis, and it's still convulsively moving around. Chizkiyama eino le'evorin. Chizkiyah says at that point, the issue of Eva Menachai does not apply yet. So therefore, so if a ben noyach were to take off a piece from this animal and eat it, Chizkiyah says he's not chayiv for eivim menachayiv. All the more so, Rashi says, we're talking about a behemoth tmeya, all the more so if it was a behemoth tahora, where there a yid could actually eat it, and you have a Rashi points out, you never have a something which is mutter for a yid and osir for a goy. So if it's mutter for a yid, there's no question it has to be mutter for a goy as well. And when it comes to a tahora, even Rabbi Yochanan would agree with that. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Yeshna Eivorim, whereas Rabbi Yochanan says there's a concept of Eivorim does apply, namely that if it's this non-kosher animal that was shechted all or both of the two simanim, then Rabbi Yochanan would say at that point the issue of Eiv Menachai applies to a ben noyach for it. So Chizkiyah says that the issue of Eiv Menachai does not apply because he says Mesa. He at this point is considered dead. The fact is, yes, it's still convulsively moving around, but the fact is the pipes were shechted, the pipes were cut, and therefore Chizkiyah says already it's considered dead. Therefore, the issue of Eiv Menachai goes away. It's a behemoth mea. It doesn't matter. It goes allowed to eat a behemoth mea. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, says that the issue of Eiv Menachai applies because it's not considered dead. Well, if it's not dead, then Eiv Menachai is going to apply. So Chizkiyah explains to Rabbi Yochanan, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why I say what I'm telling you. So that's the question. So no, the Omalei is not Chizkiyah speaking to Rabbi Yochanan. This is Rabbi Zera answering Rabbi Yumiya. Rabbi Yumiya is asking that again. Chizkiyah is saying that an animal that was shechted and is still mufakesis and is still moving around, it's not considered dead yet, and therefore it may not have tumah chamura because you may cut it up into pieces. But we see clearly from this machlokes that Chizkiyah says it's considered dead already. He says meisa, it's considered dead. So fine, it won't be maturate for a yid to eat because this is a behemoth meya, but at least it's meisa to the extent where it's not eiv menachai. Okay, so Omalei, sort of Zeta answers Rabbi Yumiya. According to Chizkiyah, you would say it's in an in-between state. Yotsa mekla chaya olcha mesa leibos. It's already, it's out of the category of a living animal, and therefore Chizkiyah holds. Eiv Menachai won't apply to it anymore, but still, it hasn't yet reached the stage of being dead, and therefore Chizkiyah can say that it doesn't have tumas nevelus yet. So it's sort of an in-between state. So by Nevela, that Pasuk actually says, Chiyomos, if it dies, so therefore he's going to say it has to actually be that it's dead, and he was not dead yet because the fact is it is moving around. Well, when we have this machlok, it's Chizkiyah and Rabbi Yochanan, who is the halacha like? Amar Rabbi Elazar, Mekoit lohodir Rabbi Yochanan biyodach. So Rabbi Elazar says you should hold in your hand what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. In other words, accept what Rabbi Yochanan is saying as the actual halacha, detoni Rabbi Oshia kabasei, because Rabbi Oshia taught a braisa that agrees with what Rabbi Yochanan says. The Tony Raboshia, Yisrael Shoshachat Behemat Tmeya Lo'ivet Bechavim, if a Yid shechts a non-kosher animal for a Goy, Shoshachat Bashnayim or Rosh Shnayim, he shechted all of the majority of the two pipes, Omer Fakeses, and it's still moving around, Netama Tumas Ochlin, so it is able to have Tumas Ochlin at this point, if it touches a Sheret, and then it itself in turn touches food, again, because a Yid shechted it, that's considered, it's a valid Shechita, and again, he had Machshava, that the Goy is going to eat it, and therefore that's enough to make it considered food, so therefore Tumas Ochlin will apply, so again, if it touches, so again, according to Rashi, it itself would have to touch a Sheret in order to contract Tumah, and then it can transmit Tumah to other food, whereas according to other Rishonim, it may not be necessary to do that. It may just be that it itself already, because it conceivably could have tumah chamura later, Because again, if a person touches or carries it, and it still is a kazayas or more, then he's going to become tame, then therefore it may not need the first touch tuma. Anyway, the tama tumas earthman, so it will have tumas earthman, avaloi tumas nevelus, but it won't have tumas nevelus because it's not considered, because it's not considered fully dead yet. At that so far, that's what our Mishnah had said. And the Braisa continues, Avra Purish Mimena, if a limb at this point is removed from it, Kapurish Menachai, then it's the equivalent of a limb that was taken off a living animal, and therefore so first of all, that means it's Avra Menachai, but it also means, in other words, that it's also going to become, it's also going to be Metame, as we're going to learn later on in our Perek. How a flesh that's removed from the animal at that point is considered like flesh that comes from a living animal. Either way, but also either way, it's also for a goy to eat it, even after the animal's life force leaves it, because since it's mechakesa, since it's still moving around, then it's considered, to that extent, it's considered alive. So the only difference, whether we consider whether it's a full aver or whether it's baser, is only as far as the matter of tuma, where aver and achai is going to be considered like an avela, as opposed to baser is not, as we're going to learn in more detail closer to the end of our parak. At any rate, we see this braisa clearly says, so far, that even though you shechted through both pipes, nevertheless the animal is still considered alive until it stops moving, and that's exactly what Rabbi Yechon says. Well, the Braisa continues, Shochet bar echad oy roiv echad. What happens if he shechted through only one pipe, or the majority of one pipe, and that's not a valid shechita yet? Einam atama tumas oichon, then it doesn't yet have tumas oichon, because then there's nothing like that that would be able to be eaten. Even if it was a kosher animal, a yid wouldn't be able to eat it. Even if it's for ben noyach, still that's not considered a valid shechita yet. It's not considered, the animal is not dead yet. Therefore, it can't have tumas oichlin. So again, even if it touches a sheretz or it itself, whatever, and then it itself touches food, it still won't be matami the other food. The Braisa continues, Nochra, similarly, if a yid did nechira with it, and we talked earlier in our Masechta, what exactly nechira is, whether it means stabbing it, whether it means tearing it, in an unnatural way, whatever the case, the point is, in other words, that he didn't do something which would be at all like a shchita, ein ba tumah shel klum, there's no tumah in it at all, for the same reason, because at that point, as long as it's moving around, nobody can eat it yet. A yid can't eat it because it's a behemoth meya, and anyway, there wasn't even a valid shchita. And the goy can't eat it yet because it's still moving around, so therefore, it won't even have too much oichlin. Whether it would have, it won't have too much oichlin, whether it will have too much nevelus is a different question. The Ravid discusses this in some place, the Rambam discusses the Ravid, and then the Kesef Mishnah discusses this on the Rambam. In any case, that's another detail in the Braisa. But Oved Kechavim Shechted Behemah Tahora LeYisrael. Now, what about the other way around? If it was a goy shechted a behemah tahora for a yid, now the yid's not going to be able to eat from it because a goy shechita is no good, as we learned earlier in our Masechta. Umfakeses. Now, if the animal is moving around, the tama tumas erchlin, still it will have tumas erchlin because there's a parallel to it that would be mutter. Had a yid shechted it, then it would have been perfectly mutter for him to eat because a yid can eat from it while it's still moving around, as we're going to talk about soon. And therefore, even though in this case it was a goy that shechted it, and therefore in practice the shechita is no good, nevertheless that still has enough of a validity for it to have tumas erchlin, avaloi tumas nevela, but it won't have tumas nevela because it's not dead yet. And Avra Purish Menaka Purish Menachai, and again, a limb that comes off it is going to be considered like a limb that comes off a living animal, meaning not only it's also to a goy to eat, or it's also for a goy or yid for that matter to eat, but also it's metame like a nevela, or bosa Purish Menach, to bosa Purish Menachai, and again, meat that comes off it without being a full Avra is considered like meat that came off a living animal, which is going to be also to eat, but it's not going to be metame, but also libne noyak, after lacha shetate nafsha, and it's also to bnei noyach even after the animal's life leaves it, even after it stops, that piece that you cut off while it was still moving around is going to be also even after the animal stops moving. That's when a goy shechts a behemah tahara, and continues the brayso. Shochad ba'echad or roiv echad. If he shechted only one pipe or the majority of one pipe, any matama tumas oslin, then it won't have tumas oslin because again, that's not a valid shechita and it's not a valid killing at all. Nochrein, but tumas shoklum. And similarly, if he did nichur, if he did nechira, then also it wouldn't have any kind of tumah. Okay. Then the brayso continues. So far we've shown from the Braisa so far, like Rabbi Yochanan, but the Gemara is bringing the whole Braisa. So the Braisa continues. Shochat over to Chavim Makam Shein Oso Isa Trefa. Suppose that a goy started shechting it in a place that does not make it a Trefa. The point, by the way, Tosfos points out, the Chiddush, when we're talking about this part of a goy shechting for a Yid, the Chiddush is that even for Yisrael, even for a Yid, where after all, you would think the whole thing depends on Shchita, and here a Shchita was done, nevertheless, a limb that comes off it is still considered Eiv Menachai, because the goy's Shchita is not considered a valid Shchita. Okay. The Braisa continues, Shochat Oud Kechavim Makam Shein Oso Isa Trefa. What happens if the goy starts shechting in a place that won't yet make it Trefa? Which would be, we learned earlier in the Masechta, that the animal, that you can have up to half the circumference of the windpipe cut through, and the animal is not there by a Trefa yet. So if a goy started cutting over there and didn't get through half the windpipe, and a yid comes and completes the shechita, shera, then it's actually kosher to eat. We don't care about the fact that the goy started the shechita. Shochat Yisrael, on the other hand, if a yid starts shechting, whether he cut to the extent that will make it a trefa, or whether not, and a goy comes and finishes the shechita psula, then it's possible because a goy shechted it, and therefore it's considered a shechita that was done by a goy. And after all, the yid had not done the proper amount of shechita first, because shechita would require him cutting through both pipes, or the majority of both of them. Continues the braisa, another case. Suppose that a person wants to eat, this we learned also earlier in the Masechta, if a person wants to eat meat from an animal before its life has left it, in other words, he wants to be able to eat from it while it's still convulsively moving around, and not be over on the issue of Eid Menachai. And as the Gemara is going to explain, that's healthy, it's a very healthy kind of cut of meat, so how does he do it? He would cut out a kezias after the shechita. He would cut out a kezias from the area of the shechita, and that way, in other words, the point is, Rashi explains it with the Masechta. In principle, you could cut it from other places as well. The difference is, other places you'd also have to strip off the skin first. That would take time, as opposed to here you have this flesh exposed right there where the shechita knife cut, and therefore you can scoop out a kezias from there. He has to salt it very well and wash it very well. Now, ordinarily, as we learned in the previous perek, you always need to salt and wash meat very well. But here we're saying that it needs even more than normal, because Rashi explains that normally, as the animal is dying after the shechita, as we learned before, it gives like a groan. It's its last groan, and with that, a huge gush of blood comes out. Whereas here, you didn't give it a chance to do that because you cut out this piece before that, so therefore it didn't have a chance. There's a lot of extra blood embedded in it, and therefore you're going to have to be extra careful to salt it very well and to wash it very well so that you get out all the blood. Tosfos earlier in the Masechta points out that another possibility we could be talking about where you want to roast it. And ordinarily roasting wouldn't require so much salting at all, but again, here, since there's a lot of extra blood there, then you need to salt it heavily and wash it carefully, even if you're going to roast it. Then you wait until the animal has stopped moving around, because otherwise he's over on a loisaseh. Rashi explains that it's actually not a strictly a loisaseh, it's actually a drabbanon, but in our case it's a drabbanon. And then he could eat it. And at this point, once both a yid and a goy would be allowed to eat it, because as we said before, Rashi explains, you never have something which is mutter to a yid and also to a goy. So if it's mutter to a yid to eat this meat once the animal has stopped moving, even though he cut it out while the animal was still moving, then a goy is going to be allowed to eat it as well. So that last point of the braisa, in other words, is saying, so there is actually a way to eat Kodim Shetetze Naksha, but only when there was a fully kosher shechita, and then at that point the animal is considered, and then actually the animal is considered dead. Okay. Um, so, um, Okay. There is actually the Rambam actually phrases it differently. The Rambam actually explains that that when you have something taken off from a Faketes, even if a Yid shechted both Simonim, then the Rambam holds it would actually be also to Bnei Noach as Eiv Menachai. And the Noisa Kalim deal with how would the Noisa Kalim over there deal with how would the Rambam exactly understand in the light of our Gemara, where we just brought a Braisa that says that it should be mutter to them. So how does the Rambam say that it's also? So a couple of the Noisa Kalim discuss details in that, why the Rambam would say that, because there are other relevant places in just before we learned a Braisa that said that when it's Mefakeses, then anything that comes off it is Purdish Menachai, and therefore it's also to Bnei Noach. So now the Rambam is not drawing a distinction whether it was properly shechted, whether it was properly shechted or not. And the Rambam would say, for a Yid is one thing, for a Goy is something else. He wouldn't say the rule that we're saying over here, that any time something is mutter for a Yid, it's automatically mutter for a Goy. And then the Kesef Mishnah discusses in some detail about that, why would the Rambam learn that way? Okay. So the Gemara says this last point, this point about cutting out a piece from the neck and eating it right away, this supports what Rabbi Idi Ba'oven says. The Omer of Idi Ba'oven, Omer Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'ashian, Harotze Sheyavri. If a person wants to be extra healthy and he wants to eat the kind of meat that will make him the most healthy, should do just that. Choseh Kazayis Basim Ve'Shchita. He cuts out a kazayis of flesh from the place of the shechita, because again, practically speaking, you can get meat out of there without having to do anything else. Umocha yofa yofa medicha yofa yofa. He salts it very well, washes it very well. A mamtin lacha tesa nafsha. Waits until the animal's life has left it, so until it stops moving. Va'oichloi, and he eats it. Mamtin lacha tesa nafsha. Echad ovi kacham ve'echad yisrael mutarim bo. And both a goy and a yid would be allowed to eat it. So that's sort of Idi Ba'oven is saying the same thing as we just learned in the Braisa. So from this Braisa it comes out you're allowed to do it, and that even a goy would be allowed to do it. Again, the Rambam seems to learn differently. Like Moses says, Boy Rabbalozer. Rabbalozer has a question in that connection. Here we're saying that there has to be a kosher shchita for it to be mutter to do this kind of thing. And if there was anything, and if anything was out of place in the shchita, then we're saying, as long as it's moving around, a goy would be also to eat from it. And we said also, more to the point, we said that it would have that it would still have Tumas Oichlin. So now, Boy Rabbi Loza, Shah Badoras Bamahu. What happens if something went wrong with the Shchita? For example, he did Shehiyah, he paused during the Shchita, or he did Drissa, he pressed during the Shchita, which we learned earlier in the Masechta, both of those things were Pasul the Shchita. So now, is such a thing considered Shchita to the extent where it will be considered food, or do we say that it has to be 100% kosher Shchita? So a certain old Talmud Chacham says to Rabbi Elazar, "Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Tzricha Hechsha Shchita kebehemet Tahora. It requires the kashrus of Shchita with all the details of Shchita, like a behemet Tahora, and only then does it have Tumas Oichlin." So it has to be exactly like the kind of Shchita that would actually be matir, that would actually be matir to eat. So Rashi actually explains, we're not talking about actually an animal that's kosher to eat. There's no question, of course, that you need a proper shchita in order to be able to eat it. The question was about the scenarios we had before, where a yid shechta behemoth meyer, or a goy shechta behemoth tahora, and we said before that even when it's moving around, it'll still have tumas oichlin. Would the same thing apply also when it was a proper shchita, but when it was basically a proper shchita done by a yid, but he did shehi or drasa? So Ahu Sava, this old Talmud Chacham, is telling him, some say that means Eliyahu HaNavi, tells him that no, Rabbi Yochanan said it requires Hechter Shchita to Behema Tahara. So the Gemara says, Hechter Lamai, what's this expression, Hechter Shchita? What does he mean? Omer Shmuel Meitzchak, B'dika Sakin, means that even to the extent Or you have to check the knife ahead of time, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, to make sure there are no nicks or problems with it, and if not, then it's a possible shechta. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying, let's say, so a yid shechted, again, we're talking about shechting a behemoth tmeya. You anyway don't need a proper shechta, because you're anyway shechting it for a goy, but if he didn't check his knife ahead of time, then it still wouldn't be considered a shechta, and therefore it wouldn't have Tumas Ochlin. In order for it to have Tumas Ochlin, it has to be that the shechta itself is 100% kosher, and the only thing that prevents it from being eaten by a yid is the fact that it's a non-kosher animal. Okay. In this connection, the Gemara says, "Bomin Reb Zera Mid Reb Sheshes." Reb Zera asked Reb Sheshes, "What about? Suppose that." So here's another scenario. Suppose you have this animal was shechted in an oihel ames under the same roof or in the same building or whatever as a mess. Now we know that anything that's under the same roof as a mess becomes tomei mess. However, we have a concept that we learned about earlier in the Masechta called bluyin. We talked about, for example, over there, we had a case where a person swallowed a ring, where therefore the ring doesn't become tameh, even if he goes into an oila mess. We have a similar kind of thing, not just with people, but with animals as well. If an animal swallows something, then the body of the animal, as long as it's alive, protects the thing inside its stomach from becoming tameh. However, once the animal dies, then that immunity goes away, and now the object is able to become tamei in an oil mess. So, bominir abzedam and abshesus maushatatzal ala bluim shabaseich. Suppose now that you have this case: a yid shechted a behemoth tameah, or a goy shechted a behemoth tahora, and it's in an oil mess. What about while it's still convulsively moving around? So the question is, would the animal be able to save kalim that are inside its stomach from becoming tomei? So it's mefakesis, and then let's say they took it out of there before it stopped moving around. So would we consider it alive, and therefore it saves the things inside it, or would we already consider it dead? Before we had Chizkiah's opinion that's sort of halfway between alive and dead. But we also said that there's a difference as far as Tumas Nevelus versus Tumas Ochlin, so which one do we consider it over here? Now, when it comes to, it actually points out, again, if it was a yid shechting a kosher animal, then for sure there would be no question. Of course, it doesn't save anything, because at that point it's already allowed, so therefore it's already allowed to eat, and therefore it can't be considered alive in any way, shape, or form. Vice versa, Rashi says, if it was a goy shechting a behemoth tmeah, there's no question, because then no tumah applies yet, because we were talking about all this time. We were talking about a yid shechting a behemoth tmeah, or a goy shechting a behemoth tahora. When it's a goy shechting a behemoth tmeah, then there's absolutely no tumah. Then there's no tumah yet. There's no tumas ochlin yet. So obviously the animal is still alive. So the question would be about the two middle cases: a yid with a behemoth tmeah or a goy with a behemoth tahora. Omalei, so Shesha says, what's the question? It's able to have Tumas Ochlin at this point. It's already considered food, and you're wondering whether it'll save anything inside it. Of course not. It's considered dead. Amalei, Reb Zera says, yeah, but on the other hand, ain't matama tumas nevelus for loy tatzel. Yeah, but it doesn't yet have tumas nevelus. Why? And you're telling me that it shouldn't save. So it's true. The fact is, it's part one, part the other. So what do we consider as far as this din? Abaya says, here's the answer. The answer is, it won't save things that are inside its stomach, because indeed it's able to become tamei. So in other words, Rashi explains this will be lachumra. So Rashi explains, in either case, we're going to go lachumra. So in this case, lachumra would be to say that it doesn't save what's inside it. Very well, that's how it's going to be. On the other hand, Abaya says, suppose a person were to commit bestiality with this animal that was already shechted and is still moving around, chayev, then he would be chayev, misa, and he would be chayev, skila b'mezer, and a chatas b'shoigig. Doha enim atama, tumas nevela, because it doesn't have tumas nevela, so therefore, in other words, we're going l'chumra either way. So Rashi explains that we're going l'chumra either way. Tosfos says, but no, in that case, and he couldn't be chayev, misas b'sin, or koris for it, if it was only a suffix. So Tosfos says it's not even a matter of lachumra. It's evidently then Abaya is saying that basically it is alive for all purposes except because it has tumas ochlin, and it's able to be eaten, and therefore it's able to have tumas ochlin, and therefore it's not able to save what's inside its stomach. The Tosfos Rosh explains actually that what it is that even if you say it's a matter of a chumra, fine. Abaya and Reb Zera have no question as far as bestiality. Of course, it's considered a chaya. we said before, actually, if a piece is taken off of it, it's considered Eivim and Achai or Bosom and Achai. So therefore, for sure, of course, when it comes to bestiality, the same dinim is going to apply. When it comes to Oil HaMes, though, Abaye is going to be Machmir. It's not a matter of he's going to say it's Daraisa, that it doesn't say, but he's going to say that since we see it, as far as Tumas Oichlin, that it's dead, then therefore this is only a Chumra Misafik. So we wouldn't say, you're right, we wouldn't say that these Kalim are Tomei for sure, Daraisa, but we would say that they are Tomei Misafik Drabanan. Now, unlike one more detail on that, unlike Rashi, who said that all of this discussion is about a yid shechting of behemoth tmeya or a goy shechting of behemoth tahora, the Rambam actually learns that this din would actually apply even if it was a kosher animal and a yid shechted both simonim. Nevertheless, as long as it's mefakeses, it's still considered alive, and the dinim of bestiality would apply to it as well. So you have a machlokas between Rashi, also Tosfos, Uri, and the Masechta, and the Rambam about that particular detail.